everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the BAM Entertainment Podcast. I'm going to be your host today, Katie Gilstrap, and with me I have Michael Thomas.
Sup, everybody.
And Colin Kelly.
Heyo.
I don't know why I acted like there was another person coming, because this is all we have today, so.
Well, we should actually talk first about why Landon Bell isn't here. It's because I have blackmail material of him saying that he loves the Star Wars prequels. And so and that he thought that they were better than the originals. To be fair, I wrote a script and had him play a character that said those things, but still, I have blackmail material.
Okay. I remember this now.
This is actually a thing, guys. We're not making this up.
Nope. Yeah, we it have exists. The scene.
Well, that's because I think how your stance of how you view the Star Wars prequels actually shapes who you are as a character. Like, you can do an exercise where you're just like, I wonder what this fictional character thinks about the Star Wars prequels, and then go from there. So here we are now.
So we are going to be talking about a Star Wars prequel today, specifically The Phantom Menace. But first, we're going... Michael, did you just puke?
Maybe.
Okay. We're going to talk about the news first. So, we had the Dark Phoenix trailer released on Wednesday night, around midnight, Eastern time. Mm-hmm. Kind of late time. What did y'all think of it?
Honestly, looking forward to the Dark Phoenix series. Like, I do think, I knew with the merger coming, like, we might run out of Fox-produced X-Men movies, and I do like how, at every time, they're not really playing it safe. They're trying something new and something interesting. So, I'm really looking forward to this. Even, I'm honestly not sure how it's going to turn out, however, but I look forward to seeing the final product and then speaking to that itself.
Yeah, so the trailer itself I actually thought was fine. There was nothing that I could say I hated about it. Only thing is that we're telling the Dark Phoenix story two times in, like, the last 12 years. And I can already see the similarities to X-Men The Last Stand. Not because it looks bad, per se, but we've already told this story by the same studio. So I'm just sort of sitting here like, what are they going to do differently?
Well, I definitely hope it's a faithful adaptation, too. We're seeing a lot of those recently, especially in comic book movies.
Yeah. That makes me feel a lot better, too.
Yeah.
Which is what studio reps have said, that this movie is going to follow more in line with the storyline from the comics, because we have Jessica Chastain's character, the alien, I think. They haven't given any specific name to her character. I'm sorry about comics. So I'm interested to see how it takes it. I actually really enjoyed the trailer. I thought it was a good trailer. Jennifer Lawrence, the light blue is killing me after years and years of a dark blue mystique. Like, I'm just saying.
So she's weird. More comic accurate. But it doesn't keep in line with the other movies, so it's very, very jarring.
I mean, they could have tried for more of a transition and over time transition or more to a comic book-approved look, but I wonder if it's because, you know, there is that kind of risk where we don't know if we're seeing another X-Men movie, not through any virtues of itself, but because of how things play out with behind the scenes. I can understand why they would probably want to go more, all right, let's move this to actually faithful to the comics. Like, this is some makeup artist's pure dream, was to get Mystique right, everybody. And they made it happen.
Yeah, they did. And so, if this was like X-Men First Class, and they started out with this sort of light blue design, I don't think it would have been as big of an issue. But this is what, like, movie 8, 9?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of people's reasoning was like, oh, well, she's a shapeshifter, she can do what she wants, but there's been standard put in place, like it's just weird.
Another question I have though is, I don't know if anybody besides me has read the Dark Phoenix Saga. I know Katie hasn't. Colin, have you read it?
I have read it. It has actually been many years, though. I read it at that opportune time to read comic books when I was 13, and, well, it's been a couple years since. At least physically. Mentally, it might be a different matter.
So, Dark Phoenix Saga really works because you're seeing the character of Jean Grey go through this transformation, and it's heartbreaking. The problem with these movies is that we've only seen, especially this version, we've only seen this version of Jean Grey once. So I'm not sure how you play that up in a movie where it's basically her downfall right after.
Mm-hmm. I mean, really, you've seen her in Apocalypse, Days of Future Past, and but you're talking about like having the Dark Phoenix personality like with her. Is that what you're saying?
I don't think Jean Grey was in Days of Future Past.
She's in the final after credit scene where they say goodbye to the original cast from the early days. Yeah.
And then they see her and young Scott walk through, I think.
Yeah, those are the original trilogy's versions, though. I'm talking about sort of this reboot trilogy.
I mean, that's interesting because the way the original story plays out is that it's those sudden shifts and bursts in Jean's personality that kind of entice and tease the Dark Phoenix coming more than anything else. So I'm wondering, especially since it's a movie and you have a limited set of time. I mean, unfortunately, they're not making like the Lord of the Rings length right. Dark Phoenix trilogy. I'm kind of wondering if maybe this would be a story that plays out better in a TV show as opposed to a on the silver screen.
So this is potentially a spoiler, but it was made blatantly obvious, and the director has said it and everything. So, did y'all catch that Mystique is the one that dies?
Yes.
I totally, maybe I'm just an optimist and I'm like, no, like I don't see it. Like, but apparently everyone caught that but me. I was just like, I can totally see it happening, but she's in later scenes of the trailer, and yes, they can cut and paste scenes from a trailer or scenes from the movie into a trailer, but I was just like, they wouldn't put that much of a spoiler into a trailer.
Honestly, if they do, I'm pretty sure it would be something akin to where we're messing, where either it's going to be part of the actual sequence events, like, you know, seeing the dead deer in Titans, or it would be, it actually isn't the case, but it's a great way to get people talking about the show.
My
second thought.
So, logically, that makes sense. That's how it should work. But then I remember The Amazing Spider-Man 2, which shows Gwen Stacy dying in the first trailer.
Oh my gosh.
Well, hopefully someone would have learned their lessons from Amazing Spider-Man 2 is the pure hope there, right?
I'm just saying, it has happened before, so I don't know.
it's a fair point. So, another trailer that came out was the Detective Pikachu trailer.
I am so happy.
Pika Pika!
Pika Pika Pika!
This is, again, something I know nothing about the background on, but I liked this trailer.
Pika 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 Pika.
Hang on, let me pull up Google Translate.
I agree with everything you just said.
Here, I thought we were going to go back and forth for like 5 minutes saying Pika Pika just to mess with everyone. I am tired, guys. Sorry.
Pika Pika.
No, I'm so excited for this because I think whenever anyone talks about adapting Pokemon properly, it's really Pokemon's a world and it's more of a setting. And I think from what we're seeing is a love letter to the classic franchise. And, well, I'm happy.
So as someone who doesn't know anything about Pokemon and doesn't have any connection to it, this trailer looks fun. This entire movie just looks fun. And as somebody who couldn't get into Pokemon as a kid, I loved everything about it. It makes me want to know more.
And that's really how it works. And that's why it succeeds, and I think that's why it's going to be a great ride, is it's appealing to not only people who haven't seen anything Pokemon, are kind of like, you know, I've always heard good things about the one yellow one, what's their name, Pikachu, and he's actually rather cute, and oh my god, he's Ryan Reynolds. But also the people yeah. like me who grew up playing, well, I joined with Fire Red and currently play Pokemon Go a little too much than I probably should be doing, but...
Is that why you got so many steps in yesterday?
No, that was because of moving an entire warehouse, and... Sorry, it's been very
You picked
tiring.
Up Squirtle along the way, though, right?
Oh, yeah, Squirtle. Actually, Fire Red was when I started, and that was when you got Charmander as your starter. But there's each version of Pokemon is released with mostly a similar storyline, but with different starting Pokemon, and so that leads to a bit of tribal warfare of, who's your Pokemon? So I heard Squirtle, I'm a Charmander. Katie, what are you? Please say Venusaur, we'll be perfect.
I know nothing about Pokemon.
Just nod. Just nod your head and be done.
Sure, I'm Venusaur.
Classic.
So, speaking of potentially blue things, Will Smith has left, or has officially announced that he will not be a part of the Suicide Squad, as it's currently being titled.
What does this have to do with blue things?
You know exactly what it has to do with blue things. You're the one who asked me if we could include the genie.
I mean, it seems like a mutual split, so it makes me wonder if they're going to keep Will Smith in the world as just because of the scheduling conflict and use a different character, or if they're going to be recasting Deadshot with a different actor, which is, well, an interesting concept question, because if they do recast Deadshot, like, there's the partially, well, who would you get to replace with Will Smith who would bring that kind of, like, dark lightness, lightheartedly dark portrayal that we saw in the first film.
I think they're gonna choose to keep Deadshot in the universe to keep the opportunity open for like cameos or something if Will Smith does choose to like return in a sense. But honestly, I don't think he's coming back, but I think out of maybe respect for the actor, like they'll choose not to recast because Deadshot's not an integral part of the Suicide Squad.
I mean, that's the question, right?
Yeah, I mean, in the first film, it's pretty much Deadshot's movie, right?
I think with Deadshot is definitely the first protagonist, but it, right. I'd say Harley might be the secondary and Flag is a third.
Right.
But Harley and Flag might switch.
So, for it to focus, we're assuming primarily on Harley Quinn, it's going to be kind of a jarring change because they're two completely different character types. Mm-hmm. So, how do you replace Will Smith? You can't, but you can replace Deadshot, if that makes sense. You could put, like, a Deathstroke character on the squad, but Will Smith, you can't replace him. So they're gonna just have to rework the entire squad.
That's actually a great idea, especially since we have a cast Deathstroke in the side of things. Let me check the Google.
It's Joe Manganiello.
Right, let me check to see if he's actually... Has Deathstroke actually worked with the Suicide Squad in the comics before?
He has, a couple times.
Yeah. Then, I mean, there's comic precedent. They're similar enough characters, though. It'd be interesting to see, because Deathstroke's always a little more darker, even though he does have his own family drama going on, how that would play out. So, James Gunn, give us a call. We'd love to talk.
Now, the Suicide Squad have to fight against Nightwing. Okay, I'm going off a tangent. Never mind.
So to prevent further tangents, let's talk about Aquaman 2. The King of December is returning in 2022, to be specific.
December release dates. That's actually pretty cool. I didn't think Aquaman would become the King of December after the Star Wars movies, but I dig it. Can't wait to see what Wanda does.
This one will be a little more Christmas themed, or like Iron Man 3, or...
What if it's like the SpongeBob episode, the Christmas special, where Aquaman has to bring Christmas to Atlantis?
I now have Aquaman in a Krabby Patty contest in my brain. Thanks, Michael. I mean, that's really exciting to see. But it's kind of, we all saw this coming after a movie makes a certain threshold of money. You're like, okay, I don't think they're going to just leave that franchise alone.
Oh, yeah, especially Warner Brothers with their DC properties. They need all the successful franchises they can get.
Yep.
This is one of two, so of course they're going to announce another one.
Do you think it's going to lead into an Aquaman trilogy? Or do you think that, as in they're planning on doing a third movie, not that the second one's going to be successful enough that we'll see a third movie?
I mean, realistically, you could, and this becomes your Iron Man 3. However, like, a lot of the actors that they've gotten to play are on more of the old side, and so, like, the stunts,
mm-hmm.
like, we're getting into 2022 already, which is five, and I can't do math, it's 3 years, really 4 years in the future that we're talking about. So, I mean, I would think that they've got to come out with some type of slate that doesn't have 4 years in between movies.
Mm-hmm.
If they wanted that to happen.
Well, I think that's why Warner Brothers is certainly going for I don't want to say higher tier of actors, it feels like, but you're getting people like Amy Adams, Henry Cavill, Will Smith even, who are in multiple movies and certainly are work on multiple projects at a time, as opposed to, I think Marvel kind of locks in more of their movie, their films. I can't remember the last movie I saw that Chris Evans did that wasn't Captain America related.
Yeah, same.
Snowpiercer.
That's right.
Is that a movie I should put on my list?
Yes.
Yeah, when you get a chance.
Watch The Social Network first. Nothing else matters. Okay.
Well, I mean, I honestly, I'm looking forward to Us coming out from Jordan Peele. So,
very true.
I'm watching Rampage tonight.
Let me know how that goes.
So, Aqua 2 Man, that should be fun.
Yes. None of the original cast has signed on yet, but obviously we're going to see Jason Momoa return. Hopefully Amber Heard. Love her.
Yes, give Amber Heard more things to do.
Yes. I am totally fine with a Mira solo film and just make this an Aquaman universe. Wait, this should be my next week. That should be my thing. Give Mira a solo movie.
I would agree with that. Give Mira a solo movie.
We're just going to go all in on the female counterpart having a solo movie for DC. Do they know?
Give Steve Trevor a solo movie.
Give Steve Trevor a solo movie. We're equitarian, all right? We want all the... I mean, because we want Harley Quinn to have a solo movie, and we want Lois Lane to have a solo movie. I mean...
Shameless plug, go read Landon's article. Anyways, let's talk about the Oscars. Michael, you watch them, you talk.
So Spike Lee won an Oscar. This is not what you want me to talk about, though, is it?
No, talk about Marvel and DC.
Well, DC didn't get anything. Because Warner Brothers wasn't smart enough to submit Aquaman for visual effects.
I know, but, right?
Yeah, that makes no sense to me.
The visual effects in Aquaman were insane!
Literally, half the movie,
it was practically animation.
Yeah. I thought Aquaman was past the Academy deadline.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, Mary Poppins got some nominations, and they both came out in December. So what, by like a day?
Yeah, no, Oscars did snub visual effects for Aquaman.
That's insane. But yeah, DC didn't get anything. We do have a few Marvel wins, though, which is pretty big. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse won Best Animated Film.
Which, yes!
Very also, well deserved.
One of the very few times an animated film has gone up against a Disney Pixar animated film and won.
Oh yeah.
I mean, we had Ralph Breaks the Internet as a competitor, and Into the Spider-Verse made it. And between the two, they're both fantastic. Oh my gosh, and Incredibles 2. which is also a superhero movie. So between those, I mean, it's great to see Into the Spider-Verse was so well done, and they're all really great movies. Don't get me wrong, but it's great to actually see Into the Spider-Verse go as far as it did.
Yeah, it was very well deserved. It was one of the best films of 2018, in my opinion. Should have been nominated for Best Picture, too, honestly.
I can see that.
The more I watch it, the better it gets. So, anyway, we'll take Best Animated Movie.
Woo!
Then we have...
I will watch it in 3 weeks.
Wow. Okay.
That's all I know.
I can follow up on that.
too long of a wait, but okay.
I'm sorry, my internet is an issue.
Oh, it takes that long to download.
No, I ordered the physical copy.
All right, moving forward, what else in Oscar news do we have that's really exciting?
Wakanda Forever. Black Panther took home 3 Oscars. Best Costume Design, Best Production Design, and Best Original Score, which that last one was a little bit surprising to me, but I'm not mad at it.
Yeah, I definitely agree with all those wins. Especially the costuming, that especially since a lot of what made Black Panther great was how much of a love letter it was. I'm glad the costuming got recognized as well as they did.
Yeah, the costumes were fantastic.
Costuming was great. The production design also, I really agree with, though, because just the look of Wakanda was phenomenal. It was the best thing Marvel has ever done. So, of course, this is the one that wins the award for it and got the nomination. Small thing, though, it did lose Best Picture, but I don't know how many people actually expected it to win anyway, aside from Landon. He owes me money.
It's okay. I have blackmail. He'll get you the money.
But it lost... It lost to Green Book, which is kind of a huge upset. Most people were expecting Roma or A Star Is Born to take home the prize there, but Green Book surprised everyone.
I need to watch that movie too. I need to watch the entire Best Picture list except for Black Panther.
Black Panther's good. Good start.
I personally would prefer Black Panther to made it as opposed to the remix of Driving Miss Daisy, but honestly, I think the big problem with comic book and superhero movies nowadays, especially from a critical perspective, is a lot of people are like, you can't tell driving or emotionally connecting stories or with super impact in them. And I just feel like that's so limited, and why we haven't actually seen superhero fatigue is the fact that we are starting to explore and see more movies where we get unique perspectives or unique superheroes. And that's, I definitely think that Black Panther is one of the more unique things the Marvel Cinematic Universe has.
I can't follow that up.
Make CBMs original. That's all we're asking.
Yeah. I mean, they are original movies at this point. They're just love letters to another inspiration.
So the final topic of news we have is news on the Star Wars park from Disney. It's called Galaxy's Edge. And a bunch of nerdy writers like us got to go to the park and like tour it and stuff. There's a lot of
great. We got to go to the park?
No, we didn't get to go to the park. We didn't get invited.
I mean, I live in Los Angeles, and I didn't get invited, so why, Disney? I used to work for you.
Disney. You're burning bridges, guys.
You realize that I should probably just go there with a Zoom mic recorder and just record something for you guys as soon as that actually opens.
Please.
Right? No. Well, and Star Wars has always been kind of present in Disneyland with the Star Tours ride, which if you can't, the original one doesn't exist anymore, but you can catch it on YouTube. But one of the best things forever that my girlfriend does is whenever she goes on the ride, she yells, but I want to go to Endor. And currently right now, the Star Tours that you actually see feature C-3PO and R2-D2, so it ties a bit more into the ongoing series. But with Disney, a lot of the Imagineers put such high level of detail into it. I imagine there's going to be Easter eggs all over the place, just as it is in more of the recent parks like Cars Land or kind of they've redone a bunch of Disney's California Adventure to be a Pixar Pier. So that'll be a lot of fun to just play around and see what references we can find within the park itself.
Well, and a lot of the images from the park itself are really cool. There's an animated animatronics Hondo. I totally screwed that up. But he is from the Clone Wars. He's the pirate, and he's completely animatronic. Looks absolutely amazing. It's just cool. So.
Well, looks like we need to make a trip to California.
Hey, if you want to come by.
We have a room to stay. Thanks, Colin.
I have couches. They're nice.
I've slept on couches before.
Me too.
There is a saga of the couches in this week, okay? Hondo, though, I wanted to ask... that's the actor who plays Winnie the Pooh, right? Plays Hondo?
We can Google that really fast.
The power of the internet rebels. Is at work, people.
Yep, Jim Cummings plays Hondo.
Katie's gonna get the results in about 10 days.
Yeah, Hondo and Aka. He also plays Tigger, so I'm excited.
That's awesome.
Dang it, what's Kylo Ren's actor's name?
Adam Driver?
Adam Driver.
Yeah, that guy did work for the park, too. So,
he also got snubbed for Best Supporting Actor, but that topic has passed.
Anyways.
Just to reference him, yeah.
There is a bunch of new material coming to... tied into Galaxy's Edge. So we've got books, we've got comics that are all coming. Delilah S. Dawson is going to be writing Black Spire that ties into the park. There's going to be a young adult book. Oh, I can't remember her name. But she sounds like a pretty cool author, as well as some comics. And they're going to be tying in the spy from Phasma. Okay. And y'all don't know what I'm talking about, but she's awesome. And her name is Vi. So, she's awesome.
I mean, it seems like awesome. We're getting Legends Reborn kind of as stuff goes on with how much the new Legends books have to tie into one another, just as the Legends books are very, very building off of each other.
Yeah, it's gonna be awesome once... I think once Episode 9 comes out and they can really, like, go full spin into the material from the sequel trilogy era. It's gonna be pretty cool. We're gonna learn a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find all reviews on wabamentertainment.com.
Woo!
Not to veer off too much, but what do you guys expect to happen after Episode 9, since that's the end of the sequel trilogy?
Honestly, I think that what they should do is they should just explore and flesh out the world with original films that are kind of more anthological. So it might not be about our main characters, but kind of more just small characters that we've seen. More of the expanding the universe on a cinematic scale is what I would like to see. Eventually, before I am going to place money on them bringing back Star Wars for episodes 10, 11, and 12. But I hope they give us a pause between those to a point where I think a lot of the fan reception, or when they get to a point where maybe the amount of their ability to explore those eras is maxed out. And then hopefully that's when we'll see that new reawakening, I guess.
I don't know what's going to happen after Episode 9, but...
I mean, we don't even know what's going to happen in Episode 9.
We don't even know the title of episode 9. Disney, please give us the title of episode 9 so we can stop asking.
So we can stop figuring out. And please write in your suggestions.
I'm content with it just being Star Wars. That's it. We already renamed
Star
the movie
Wars.
That was titled Star Wars.
Star Wars, episode 9. Star Wars. So if you have any suggestions, seriously, write to us. And if you're actually right, we will do something.
How about a giveaway?
Yeah.
Well, obviously it ends when they announce it.
Right.
We'll buy you a copy of the DVD. And maybe movie
when it comes out in March of next year.
Yeah.
We'll figure something out. You'll win something.
Listen, if you're right and you actually guess it, we'll actually help confirm this to Lucasfilm and we'll see what can happen. Oh, exceptions being obviously if you're currently working on the films and no thanks, at which point, well, talk to us anyways. We'd love to know.
Wink, wink, yeah, nod, nod.
Be our insider.
We'll buy you tickets to the movie and a DVD for sure. If that's the case.
You see, I was just going to get him like a Funko Pop or something. Okay.
College is going all out. I mean, it's cool. It's cool, man.
I mean, that's like $50. I mean.
So, let's talk about what we all came here to talk about.
I did not come here to talk about this. You forced me into it.
Hey, I bought you the movie, okay? Can I have some?
That just reinforced it more that I had to be here to talk about it.
So, the
I'm not the only one with blackmail material. Interesting.
I have a lot on him.
She does. It's bad.
So, The Phantom Menace, obviously the first of the prequel trilogy, technically the first movie in the timeline, per se. What did you guys think of it? I know a lot of people don't very much like it.
So my biggest takeaway from this movie is that there's always a bigger fish. I still don't know what that means. But that's basically how I feel about this movie. I don't know what this movie... What's the point of this movie's existence? Because even in the prequels, I think you could just start with episode 2 and 3, and you don't even need this film. I mean, we have the relationship with Qui-Gon and Anakin, which is interesting. It's also pretty interesting to see how the Jedi Council don't want Qui-Gon to take on Anakin as a Padawan. And we can get into that a little bit later, because I have a question about that. But overall, this movie is a pain. Jar Jar single-handedly destroyed this film as well, because he has no character arc or story or any personality that's not just being there to be annoying. So, yeah, I hated this movie. But it's not the worst film I've ever seen, so points for that?
It's fair.
I mean, they're fair. So I've had many, my opinion on The Phantom Menace changes, I feel like, every time I encounter it again or if I learn something new about it. I definitely agree that it is not a perfect film. And I feel like Jar Jar Binks was meant to be more of the R2-D2 C-3PO character that's kind of there and cute and fun, and we're supposed to be the heart of things, right? But the way he's presented and what happens with him is not empathetic. When R2-D2 C-3PO is in the deserts of Tatooine, just like doomed and gloomed and like so worried, like that is relatable. And with Jar Jar Binks, it's he gets into bad situations and he doesn't learn from his actions.
Right.
And I think I actually subscribe to the theory that Jar Jar Binks was originally supposed to turn into the more of a central character in the episodes 2 and 3, just like R2-D2 and C-3PO do. But the way things played out, unfortunately, it doesn't, as part of reaction, I think that was changed. And that's a theory, so don't But we don't know if that's true or not or what happened. But I think a lot of this is George Lucas being like, this is probably the most outside of the original Star Wars. Well, no, even this is George Lucas' pure vision without any edits or any corrections or impediments to that almost. Like, this movie is George with money, with a plan, and he am able to actually present everything without a lot of pressure from anyone outside of people being excited for more Star Wars.
Yeah. I would consider this really his love letter to Star Wars, because he wanted to give the show more. He wanted to give the series more background. We get a crap ton of background in here, and I think Jar Jar Binks, like you said, Colin, was supposed to be the R2-D2 and C-3PO, but it was also supposed to almost, like, bring in the new generation and, like, give them something to attach on to, because he's definitely a funny character, and he got a lot of hate for the actor, Ahmed something, got a lot of hate for it, and I'm really sad about that, because I like Jar Jar Binks. But maybe that's because I was a kid when I first saw this movie, and so I attached on to him. And I still, every time I see Jar Jar Binks, I look at him and I'm like, oh, that's my childhood right there, in a nutshell. Like,
Ahmed Best. Yes. And I definitely think there's a huge issue where I'm not sure if it was present before this movie, where the fan backlash against an actor specifically has ever happened before, because it's really unfair, because it's not an actor's fault, really. Like, actors make choices, but the fact that that character is present in a film, and the fact that it's written in such a way that has that dialogue, is always more the responsibility of the writer. So... it makes no sense. Please stop it, guys.
The biggest problem with the character of Jar Jar is that, like I said earlier, there's no arc to his character. Like, at least you can feel R2 and 3PO's emotions and their characters change over the course of the film, mm-hmm. or the course of the series. With Jar Jar, he's just there to goof up, get other people in trouble, and never learn from his mistakes. And that's the part that really, really irritates me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. If Jar Jar had agency, then he would, like, makes a major difference.
Right.
Like, honestly, if he decided the moment he got promoted to general to become serious, I think that would have changed how everyone feels about Jar Jar Binks as a whole.
Well, and this is a little off topic, but when in episode 2, Jar Jar is actually the one who gives the Chancellor the emergency powers to create the clone army.
Mm-hmm.
So exactly. his mistakes follow him through the entire series, and that's completely possible. Like, plausible to, yeah.
Well, and even then, we don't get any sense of that Jar Jar has done something to earn recognition, I think is what comes down to. Like, when he gets the position, it's more through happenstance and him happening to run into Qui-Gon Jinn in the jungle. And so there's no character agency when he's made into a general. And then as a general, he still has no creative agency. He just gets lucky enough that his friends save his life.
And they really played on that in the Clone Wars. There's a lot of Jar Jar Binks specific episodes where he's still klutzy, but he's kind of taking on responsibility, but in the sense, he just gets really lucky, and that's just his character.
And, well, that kind of turns him into a walking plot device as opposed to a character.
That's literally what he is.
Plot. So he's just Domino, huh? But way more annoying.
Well, no, Domino has personality, at least, and expressions and a bit of agency to what she's doing. Like, even in Deadpool 2, she still makes a decision and a choice. She's like, you know what? I'm going along with the universe. It's like, I'm choosing to go along with the universe.
Well, I mean, there's like 3 or 4 episodes where, like, Jar Jar Binks he finds like Anakin's cloak on Padme's ship, and then he goes through the entirety of those episodes like trying to rescue Padme, and everyone thinks he's a Jedi because all these magical things are happening around him and he's getting lucky and like
see
like
Jar Jar Binks being a Force master would be an interesting twist, honestly.
Well, like there's one where there's this giant magnet and that he flips the switch accidentally and all the droids go up in the air and like just get attached to this magnet, and I think that the Trade Federation people were around him or like some sort of separatists, and they saw it happen and they were like, oh my gosh, what just happened? There's a Jedi here. It's kind of funny.
I mean, to get back on topic, I think what's happening is that Jar Jar Binks' personality and his character isn't where we would like it to be, and we'd like it to have been more, is where a lot of the anger against the character from this movie, I think, comes from.
Also, the Clone Wars can fix everything, even Jar Jar Binks.
Exactly. I mean, I think that we've pretty much gotten the entire gamut of opinions on Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah. But overall, like I said, I enjoyed the movie. I like the pod racing scene. I like the politics. But I'm a background person. I enjoy learning about background of things. And so it's all intriguing to me, really.
All right. Can you actually explain to me, please? What exactly is the issue with the Trade Federation? Because it seems like, for me, that they have set up a blockade on a planet. They're making sure that no trade can happen until they sign an agreement, which in most situations is an act of war, it feels like. So why behind the scenes is this not a, like, is it just because they're keeping it quiet until after it's signed? Like, it doesn't make a lot of sense in our current world, so I'm kind of wondering what sense it has in the Star Wars universe.
So, with the Trade Federation starts the blockade because the blockade is a legitimate act in the New Republic, which both the Trade Federation and Naboo are part of the Old Republic, but they're part of the Republic. So the blockade is legitimate. However, they cannot force anyone into a trade agreement based on the rules for the Republic. So what the Trade Federation is doing is they're preventing any trade from happening, and then they're bringing down the battle droids to try and convince it's like the president saying they can go to war, but they have to let Congress know within a certain amount of days. So they can do all of these acts, but as long as they get approval from the person afterwards, which is what the treaty is trying to do, then it's completely legitimate.
Okay, so the big issue is whether or not it's ethical that they are strong-arming the Queen into signing a treaty. So then my question would be, what situation would arise in a blockade? Are we talking like a failure of payment? Or like, is the Trade Federation just one big debt collector's agency here, and this is their version of calling you constantly? They've shown up to their house and they're demanding payment as part of the treaty, or what?
So we don't know that much, and we kind of knew it in the Legends universe. I can't remember what it was in the Legends universe, but I know we knew it. So what could have possibly happened is the Trade Federation wanted to sell certain goods to Naboo, and the Queen didn't want those goods, or she was getting those goods from somewhere else. And so the Trade Federation is trying to get her, like, through the blockade and through bringing down the battle droids, and is trying to get her to sign on to getting these things.
This still makes no sense, even with the explanation. Yikes.
I just want laser swords, guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair, but this is what part of the issue I have. It's kind of, we have this cool world building, we have this kind of situation that arises, but it doesn't feel organic because it doesn't make logical sense. And I mean, it's definitely something where I'd be interested in what a legal department or a legal expert would actually think of any actual situation, or maybe this might be a law history question for what kind of purposes you need for a trade blockade, but so that isn't actually concerned with war. So if you're listening to this and you happen to be a historian of legal blockades... All right. Sorry to derail on what is particularly like the first big nitpick I feel like people have.
Well, and so that's where a lot of like the book material and the background information for before the Phantom Menace needs to come in. And we're actually going to be getting that. We're going to get a book on Master and Apprentice, which will star Obi-Wan Kenobi and Qui-Gon Jinn. And then we're going next week. We get a book called Queen's Shadow, which is going to be Padme transitioning into being a senator, but also it goes back on to before she was elected and during her time. So maybe we'll get that background there.
Are you going to be reviewing these?
Yes, I will.
Now, my question would be, so obviously with Legends happening, all of that, the previous films and explanations are all no longer canon. So does this mean that we're going to find out the new official Disney reason why in these films or these books?
Theoretically, yes.
Man, we are just part of the marketing machine, everybody.
Disney, give us stuff.
I mean, clearly review copies at the very least.
I don't mind politics. Politics are, of course, what leads to the Star Wars. But this movie just sort of hits you over the head with it, that if you're not paying attention, you can't keep up. And even if you are paying attention, you sometimes can't keep up.
Listen, I'm gonna bring
you to sleep.
I think talking about the politics is actually a really good thing to do, especially in this prequel trilogy, because politics is at the main forefront. There's a reason one of our main characters is a senator and a queen, and well, really, who Darth Sidious is and how Palpatine plays out is actually very bureaucratic as things go on.
Yeah.
So we had a poll on the Wabam Entertainment Twitter for where the Phantom Menace ranks in your list of Star Wars movies. So 5% of 111 people said it was top dog.
Really?
20% of people said it's ranked 2 to 5. 41% of people said 6 to 9. And 34% of people said last but not forgotten.
Interesting.
Wow.
So my question to you guys is, where does it rank for you?
I don't use that system.
in the current film universe, counting Solo and counting Rogue One, where
listen, when it comes to things, The Phantom Menace is the Star Wars movie with the most amount of missteps. Like, I really think you could have changed half the movie if you just replaced Naboo with Alderaan. And it definitely would have felt more invested in what was happening with it and what is going on here. And maybe treasured it more when Episode 4 happened. But
that's a genius change.
it's not my change, to be clear. Someone else came up with that and I saw that somewhere. But when it comes to things, this movie manages to have less missteps than Solo story, I would say, in that it's a story that we actually wanted to see, and that it actually tells something in the characters. It's a great prequel in that we actually want to know, how the heck did this scared little boy with a little bit of talent turn into Darth Vader? And that, when it comes to storytelling, that is why I watch films, is I want to see these stories. And I think Phantom Menace succeeds in that regard.
Well, fun fact. So for Alderaan, we obviously have the Organas, but in this movie, he's Bail Antilles.
Yeah, I caught that. I don't understand that. Can you explain this, please?
No, they're a matriarchal society. Oh my gosh. I didn't know that. Wait, does that mean Wedge is a cousin of the princess?
I think originally that was the goal, but not actually.
Oh, but
so like,
they no, because it's in the movies. So, oh my gosh, I didn't know that.
Well, so I think Bria's last name is Antilles, which is what you're talking about, right, Colin?
No. Wedge Antilles and I thought you said Bale's last name was Antilles.
No, so I think they wanted to tie it in to Wedge Antilles and like mm-hmm. do that, but ultimately they chose to go a different route because they hadn't defined who Bale Antilles was
mm-hmm.
at the time.
So you think it was a bit of a retcon on Star Wars' part in a way? That was actually Bail Organa. But yeah, okay. I think I like my version of things better, because
I was very confused. I was like, huh?
But that has to make Wedge like a Duke of some sort, right?
Wedge is from Corellia.
I know.
But his Bale's captain's name ended up being Antilles. And so it's a common name, apparently. Mm. So
it's just funny how one line of dialogue got me so confused.
I'm not entirely certain. There's some background on Wikipedia.
Wait. Well, that was before Legends was consistently non-canon. So if we have only the films and the TV shows to rely upon, my headcanon still counts. I mean, do we have any other cool things that shape how we view the movie in any way? Because that is one thing with this movie. There's a lot of choices and references to other movies. Like, the entire pod racing sequences is a very big love letter to the film Ben-Hur that inspired George Lucas to become a filmmaker.
Oh, okay. So, sorry, I do apologize. It was not a retcon. It was a different Bale. So, it says on Wikipedia, it says, at some point following the invasion of Naboo, came to represent his home planet in the Senate of the Galactic Republic, succeeding Bale Antilles, his relative by marriage. So there you go. It's not the same Bale. I'm sorry, people. I'm sorry we just went off on a huge tangent.
No. By marriage. Does that mean that Bale Organa is related to Bale and Tilly's by marriage? Listen, all I'm thinking is that Alderaan and Corellian romances have clearly happened in the past before. Let's just move on from this point because we're getting to Game of Thrones levels of genealogies here. I just hope we don't hit Lord of the Rings.
Oh boy.
So let's talk about R2-D2 and C-3PO because they're consistent across every single movie. So how do they? In this film, this is kind of is supposed to be the, you know, when Thelma meets Louise kind of situations. So how do we feel about R2-D2 and C-3PO?
So I thought their introduction to each other was kind of cute. I really enjoy R2-D2's like saving of the Nubian ship. Like, that scene was just iconic to me, like where all the rest of the droids get shot off and stuff. But C-3PO is just funny, and you can tell he hasn't developed like his personality yet in this movie, because he's just friendly in a sense, and C-3PO is not very friendly really, unless you don't know him.
Michael, what do you think?
I agree with Katie. It's cute. It didn't matter much in the grand scheme of things, but. You know, if you're going to have sort of the connective tissue in the Star Wars movies, the droids are the best way to do that. And so I thought it was a nice touch adding them in there.
No, I agree. It definitely, I think it's one of the more best. I mean, it definitely shows us the, I think in A New Hope, we kind of got a great introduction to who C-3PO was at R2-D2, but we never actually see R2-D2 like show why he's a special droid, and I think that's a lot of I think a lot of fans were extremely happy with his introduction or their introduction. Anyways, C-3PO, on the other hand, I feel like in this movie there's something special about C-3PO. And that is, he hasn't figured out that R2-D2 is just slightly going to get them all killed. Because the relationship right now is, the very much the R2-D2 telling C-3PO stories, and C-3PO just being like, wow, that's amazing. How did you survive that? And then it kind of morphs into from being a fan of these stories to not wanting to be in these stories at all. Please help me. Why, oh God, why did we do this? and it's great because... If we only knew, indeed. No, but it's great because we... even in this prequel, when we meet R2-D2 and C-3PO, they aren't wholesale who they are in the original trilogy. They have yet to become that.
Yeah, and that's what I was really looking for in these prequels in general, not just The Phantom Menace. The reason we have prequels is to give us background and history on these characters, especially considering we know what happens to them in the future. Like, when Obi-Wan's dangling there towards the end of the film, about to fall to his death, we know he's not going to. But you basically are watching this movie to see how does this shape who he is as a person, as a character, in the next film or in the original trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And as a whole, I don't think we got that for like Anakin and Obi-Wan in this film. In the next two films, we do. But that's sort of my biggest drawback here, especially it doesn't feel like a Star Wars movie to me. Mm-hmm. Out of all the prequels and the sequels and the new trilogy, this is the one that doesn't fit the Star Wars model, per se, in my opinion.
Interesting. I mean, I definitely agree with you there, especially a huge problem with prequels, and we could probably do an entire rant on this itself. Is that they rely on the drama of the characters in the situations to be life or death, but the reality is that there is no drama because we know the answer. The answer is they live through this. And so great prequels will actually shape how the perspective of the characters through, I think, trauma more than anything else.
Right.
And a lot of what this prequel kind of does more than anything else is that actually is like, hey, we had a great adventure with characters, but at the end of the movie, they're still not exactly the characters that we know and love. And well, I think... Sorry?
So I would say the last act of the movie where Darth Maul comes in is just like, it feels completely thrown together. And I agree with y'all, right. Like, we don't get a whole lot of development from Obi-Wan Kenobi, or I disagree on Anakin, because I think we get a lot from him and his personality and how he goes into the role of Jedi. But with Obi-Wan, especially, like, we don't get a lot from him, and having him sit there on the ledge, we don't understand his motivation for coming up, other than he wants revenge because his master just died.
You know, Katie, we could totally go over this and solve this entire problem very simply, but it would piss off a lot of people who love the cinematics of that entire Duel of Fates.
Do it.
Have Maul and Obi-Wan Kenobi and Qui-Gon Jinn goddamn conversation.
Hit me with your best shot.
No, I'm serious, because what is meaning here is the Sith versus the Jedi. And what it really should be, and what really should be happening, is that Obi-Wan and Anakin, or not Anakin, Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon Jinn should be trying to investigate what is going on here. They should be probing for information. And so when the moment they're encountering this guy, they go, oh, we're going to fight now, feels a bit hollow because of that. It becomes epic because of the sequences and events, but what really we should happen now is a duel of philosophy.
Yep.
Especially with the Jedi supposedly being peaceful, they sure jump into battle really, really quickly.
Mm-hmm. It definitely should be a defend themselves kind of contest.
Yep.
Well, and especially with Maul, like, I think you really could have brought some of his personality to life. Like, I know, I don't think George Lucas intended him to live much longer than this movie, which he ends up doing. But I think you really could have played his character up and had, like, not just a lightsaber battle there. You could have really developed Maul's character there, and then through that, you develop Obi-Wan, and you don't just see Obi-Wan waiting there with the gate blocking him from Qui-Gon, from defending Qui-Gon. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, there's...
Does Maul even say a word in this movie?
He does.
He says maybe three sentences, however.
Yeah.
I did not remember.
See, I think, and to be honest, having dialogue could not ruin the iconic moment where we do actually see a moment of philosophy where Maul paces in between the shields and Qui-Gon meditates while Obi-Wan looks excitedly trying to ascertain or plan or figure out what he can do in this situation.
Yeah.
All you have to do is, you know, the fact that those shield generators be really loud and be unable to hear between them. And what do they do in this moment? They show who they are.
Boom.
Roasted garbage.
I need to watch. I need to write a Phantom Menace audio drama. NPR, let's talk.
So, Qui-Gon and Anakin's relationship is just, it was really interesting to me. Like, just to see how Qui-Gon just bonds with Anakin automatically.
Yeah.
It is, like, it's weird, but in also in a sense, like, it fits Qui-Gon's personality.
Yeah, so Qui-Gon is probably the weirdest Jedi we've gotten. Because it doesn't seem like he's as in tune with the Force as Obi-Wan is. Because even at the start of this movie, Obi-Wan is just like, Master, do you sense something? And he's just like, no. And then, like, 5 minutes later, they get attacked by droids. And so, I'm not sure how I feel about this connection he has with Anakin, because I'm already questioning Qui-Gon's connection to the Force.
Mm-hmm.
And then, we know what happens to Anakin already, so that's already a big red flag. So, my question is, with Qui-Gon, would things have gone differently if he didn't die?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
So I'm going to speak to this because I think that is how Qui-Gon Jinn is a master. And I think the big frustration between Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan is that Qui-Gon does not reveal his hand until he plays it. And so every time they're in these situations, Qui-Gon's just all nonchalant because, as a presentation and mannerisms. And so, but he's pushing Obi-Wan to be better and to analyze the situation more by questioning how he views the situation. And by pushing for that third perspective, I think Qui-Gon actually shows us what is commonly referred to as the Gray Jedi, where it's not dealt in absolutes, but in figuring out what is the best way to operate in the situation and what is the will of the Force.
And Qui-Gon's really a special Jedi, and we learn later on, like, he's the one that reaches out to Yoda and Obi-Wan and shows them how to do the Force Ghost.
Mm-hmm.
So he's just outside the bounds, and he doesn't, like you said, Colin, he doesn't have to think in absolutes. Like, he just goes with the flow.
Well, and he questions it, too. Like, even in the floor, he asks, is this what we need to be doing? Could we be doing this? It is very dangerous. Are you sure you want to do that? And if you play out the Qui-Gon Jinn's personality, let's imagine he's still in the picture. He would have been someone, I imagine, even as Obi-Wan trains Anakin, who would be counseling him. And when stuff goes down with Padme, I mean, he would have become a phone-a-friend that would have changed the events, because Qui-Gon's reaction to... What part of being a Jedi says one must not feel love or something like that?
Right.
It's like, don't get attached, but still experience your feelings and emotions.
And that's my biggest thing from the entire prequel trilogy. He keeps saying he's the chosen one. And of course we see that doesn't happen. But if Qui-Gon was there to help him along the way, would he have been the chosen one?
I mean, ultimately, Anakin is the chosen one. He fulfills his destiny when he takes down Sidious in Episode 6.
after blowing up like four planets.
Well, it actually also determines how you define bringing balance to the Force, because a common interpretation is that balance to the Force means that there is an equal number of Force users, so the Force itself isn't contained within a centralized order or power.
Yeah,
technically Anakin achieves that, but he has to do that by destroying the Jedi Order.
Yeah, so because it breaks it down to where you have Yoda and then him and Sidious on the other. Granted, there are interspersed that Jedi users. Obviously, we have Kanan, the last Padawan, who's in Star Wars Rebels. He trains Ezra, and then we have Ahsoka. Ahsoka's definitely, I think, besides Qui-Gon, she's the first gray Jedi, but that's a different story. But he does bring balance. Trying not to get off topic again.
No.
You're still on Star Wars, so I say you're on.
But no, I think that's part of, unfortunately, when it comes to a series like Star Wars, you have to talk about it in its almost entirety, which is a bit frustrating because I know time is an issue for a lot of us where there's more things coming out that we have to experience. And like, I'm going to have to check out this Mandalorian TV show, but I need time to do that. It's great how we fill each other in the connections from these stories, where I don't need to buy every Legends book to know kind of what happens in this story in front of me. But those connections are what makes Star Wars incredibly unique.
Yes. So this is just kind of a random side note, kind of. So Natalie Portman and Keira Knightley look astoundingly similar, especially when one is wearing makeup and the other is not. So I know Michael just watched it. So did you catch on to who was who?
Nope.
All right, so I
didn't even know this was a thing until you pointed it out to me afterwards.
No. So I have a list of every Star Wars scene in The Phantom Menace, of which there are 50. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to throw out scenes and you guess whether or not. And people can write in and tell us the truth, because I have no idea. I'm going to find this. And I've been Googling it pretty hard. So let's just hit the main beat points. So obviously, when they're negotiating with the Trade Federation and she sends her original message, we first meet the Queen. Is that Kiara or is that Natalie? What do we think?
Natalie.
I'm thinking that's Natalie.
Yeah, I think it's pretty safe in this situation. There's no reason for the Queen to have switched. I think we're pretty unanimous that is Natalie. So I guess as we carry on more, we actually meet the Queen a second time when they're actually in the invasion of Theed and they actually have her restrained. Who do we think is playing in that situation, Kiara or Natalie? This is from when we meet the Gungans to when we get rescued by the Jedi. So we got one Kiara. Okay, and that why would that be, Michael? I'm going to keep rotating, and I'm sure you know this these is answers.
It was this moment that made me question if that was Natalie. So it's sort of a gut instinct.
Well, and especially like going from when they're rescued to when she goes on the ship, we see Natalie. And she cleans up R2-D2, so she's kind of in the same outfit from where they are in the throne room to where they get captured. So that's my reasoning.
My bit of evidence was the fact that she said to take her handmaidens with her.
Mm-hmm.
That also works.
Yeah. So anyway, where it really gets conflicting. Let's assume that it's Natalie, because it obviously is, throughout the entirety of on Tatooine. Which means that it has to be Kiara on the ship radioing back to things. It's really where it gets conflicting is once we get to Coruscant.
So I would say the only time Natalie is in the Queen's role and not as a handmaid is when Anakin comes in and he asks to speak to Padme, and she's as the queen right now, and so she doesn't want to draw attention to her. So she's speaking for Padme when she's like, we will let her, we're sure her heart goes with you. And she's speaking as Padme right there. Because she's going to talk to the Senate, and so you want actual queen front and center right there. And then when she tells Palpatine that she's going to be leaving to return to Naboo, mm-hmm. I would say that's her as well.
All right. And well, obviously, once we return to Naboo, there we have the Grand Room, so we know whom is who from that point onwards.
Yep.
So, how do we do? I think we got it all mostly right. If we failed miserably, well, you can let us know.
At WabamENT.
Wabam. On Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram.
Wabam! We need, like, theme music now, guys. Come on. Like, something driving and epic, like... Wabam!
I've been working on that for, like, a year, but nobody seems to go with my pitch.
I haven't
listen, I like your pitch. Timbre of your pitch, all right? What's the cadence?
Okay, so do we have anything else on The Phantom Menace?
This has the best soundtrack of all the films.
Yes.
I know the Imperial March is iconic, but throughout all of this, this is the first one where it actually is a wondrous, I think. And even in Duel of the Fates, especially with how that plays with the choreography, which is, this is incredibly well choreographed.
Yes.
Yep.
Like, they made the choreographer a Jedi in the Legends canon. That's how revered this guy is.
Wait, what's the choreographer's name?
I want to say it's Nick, and his character in Jedi Master is Sin something. Syndrolig. Syndrolig is a Jedi Master during the Clone Wars. He even has his own biography, and he's appeared. He's been on Clone Wars. Oh my gosh!
Yes. Oh my gosh! I know who that is.
So he's good.
The stunt coordinator Nick Gillard was used as the basis for the character's name.
Oh my gosh!
Yep. So that's how legendary that choreographer is, and really just a wonderful job. Though I think it's funny that he's nicknamed the Troll. Apparently that's what the Jedi called him. He's the Troll.
Funny. Guys, Samuel Jackson was in this movie.
Oh my god, that's right!
He was in this movie. I felt like he's more of a very minor character, in my opinion.
Here's my question. Do you think he negotiated for his purple lightsaber for this film? Or was that the second film? Yeah. Like, I'm just wondering if, like, the entire time he's sitting there going, I have a purple lightsaber.
I'm not entirely certain.
I'd be interested in that timeline.
This Yoda looks mega weird.
Yeah, unfortunately, like, I feel like if they did they make a new puppet, because it doesn't look like the original puppet enough, and it looks slightly like it doesn't feel like it was made by the Jim Henson puppeteers, but it wasn't exactly CGI, so it doesn't really trick your mind into thinking it's a real character.
Yeah,
it definitely the CGI in this movie. We didn't even talk about that, but my god, it was all over the place. Give him a break, because it was 99 though.
Well, and this actually, Star Wars started, I think, great CGI happening. I mean, sure, we had it in animation before, but it's the first time I think we got to the scale and scope that we've seen.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what, Beauty and the Beast kind of was starting with the ballroom scene. Some of that CGI animations and how that played out before we saw Pixar. So yeah. It's actually great to see how visual effects evolved, and from a film history perspective, you have to watch this movie.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's dated, but I don't have a problem with it, because you look at The Phantom Menace, and then you look at the recent Star Wars movies, or something like Aquaman or Avengers Infinity War, and you're just like, my God.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you can even then, you still see some of the techniques that were pioneered in The Phantom Menace. The visual effects haven't aged poorly, I don't think. I mean, they're a little more obvious than their special effects, I think, because that's just the nature of the quality we're seeing nowadays, but it holds up.
So, do y'all have any ideas for potential prequel era movies? So before Revenge of the Sith.
You just don't want my Luke Skywalker movie.
You know what? I would like to see how Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan met. Or like a version of them where they are the actual investigators, kind of what we see out Anakin and Obi-Wan being in between 1 and 2. But I think some place where it actually fleshes out like a Fistful of Dollars style Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan film.
So that actually brings me to Master and Apprentice, which is coming in April. And it is set 7 years before The Phantom. And it is around the time when, like, Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon first become Master and Apprentice, because it's called Master and Apprentice, I think.
Oh, I see.
So, that will be coming in April, and I will review that and tell you.
Shameless plug?
Shameless plug.
Shameless plug.
Nice. Prequel stories? Is it generic if I say Knights of the Old Republic?
Oh, Knights of the Old Republic. Yes, please.
Safe choice, but that's really the only thing now set in this area. I think we covered all the big stuff.
Well, I mean, I think you could still keep exploring and telling stories. I think you should just, like, if I really feel like with Star Wars as the really great approach, like comic books, where you could just keep the same universe, but just start telling characters of the stories of what's happened to this character at this point in the universe. Like, and you could have them be tangentially connected or just have similar technology, I think, and still achieve great art. A lot of the great comic books that I read growing up were the Star Wars anthologies, where they had a bunch of different stories just written in the same universe. And it's things like, oh yeah, no, they're great because they have different art styles and different, just completely different creative teams, but they're fantastic. And I think a really high form of visual fiction, if you can get a hold of one. Because you know what? Don't tell me that science fiction art can't connect with human beings. Star Wars is fully capable of doing that. And I think the reason why Star Wars has been so successful is how well we connected with it in the first film.
Oh.
As in A New Hope, yes.
Colin's just like a master at saying exactly what I kind of want to say.
More of a knight than a master. I've yet to take an apprentice.
But, okay, so I think the last topic really is Queen Shadow, which will cover Padme's transition, like I said before, from Queen to Senator, mm-hmm. And it'll gloss back on some of her War of the Phantom Menace days. So as she... Ooh.
Well, I actually realized, I'm so terribly sorry, I have not touched upon, but this is Padme's best film. Like, Padme Amidala is the greatest character in this film.
Really? Because I would say her best film is Attack of the Clones.
Well, I'll get to the Attack of the Clones, believe me.
we gotta hit Attack of the
Clones. Attack of the Clones is when she's the most human, I'd say. But when it comes to her having control over the plot of this movie, the entire film doesn't happen without her making a decision. And the way things play out are very much constantly, my queen, what do you want's happening? And she's just She's smart enough in learning a new perspective that she is able to make the right choice for her people. Mm-hmm. Like, regardless of how things play out, I really respect Padme Amidala in this film more than I do any other ones because of who she is and what she does.
Well said, well said.
Mm-hmm. So, you know what? A Padme Amidala solo film. Let's get one of those.
Yes!
Seriously, you have Natalie Portman still.
You get a solo film. You get a solo film. Yay!
I mean, if Han Solo can get a solo film, why not, right?
I'd be okay with, like, The Adventures of Young Padme, like, happening. I mean, she was 14 when she was elected queen. Like, that's got... Like, you could totally do a political campaign movie about Padme Amidala in the Star Wars universe.
Just get Millie Bobby Brown to play young Padme.
Yes!
What happened to her playing young Leia?
Yes, that too.
Why can't she do both?
Listen, how about a young... She has to play young Padme now, so when she's older, she can play young Princess Leia. Because yeah, young Princess Leia, we need the feisty senator who's standing up to the Emperor himself.
Ah. Disney, you got that new streaming service. You're going to have to fill it up with content. Hit us up.
And look, somebody who's really experienced at filming things for streaming services. Who has an interest?
Deputy Editor-in-Chief, is this show done?
I think it is.
It is, it is.
I think we've covered all we intended to talk about today, boys.
And then some.
Yeah.
And then some.
I got Deathstroke fighting Nightwing in this conversation, so I did good.
You didn't get Avatar in this time, so...
I think I got the Avatar reference in, if you can spot it.
Oh, now I'm really gonna have to listen.
Hey, everything was fine, and then the Trade Federation attacked.
Flameo, Hotman!
And on that note, where can we find you boys on social media?
If you need some insanity in your life, you can find me at Crazy. You'll definitely be prepared to learn a lot about audio fiction.
You can find me at MTJR_5. I tweet pretty much random thoughts, but mostly superhero garbage.
Woo!
You can find me at KKLStrap13 on Twitter or Instagram. I tweet a lot about college, Star Wars, and DC. Sometimes Marvel. And you can find more reviews, news, editorials, features, whatever they're called, on wabamentertainment.com and our social media, Wabam Entertainment or Wabam ENT, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube.
Woo.
Have a great
night. Wait, we have a YouTube channel?
We do have a YouTube channel that I don't think there's anything on it, but...
So we'll put the podcast up there with like a background scene.
We're going to fix like that, guys, we promised.
Yeah.
One of these days we'll have like commentaries or like reactions.
Listen, if you want to order our riff tracks of the Phantom Menace, it'll one day exist. You should go check our website to see if it exists now. It's probably hilarious.
Yep.
And insightful. Because Katie's on it. And Michael.
Aw, shucks.
And sometimes Colin.
And sometimes Landon. And sometimes
Colin. Yeah. And John once in a while.
And John Isaac. Every once in a blue moon. I think all the time. We love you, Isaac. Sometimes.
Get some sleep, buddy. I know you need it.
Please. All right, everyone. Water, rest, eat now.
Have a great night, day, or afternoon, whenever you're listening. See you next time.
Take care of yourselves.
There's always a bigger fish.
You've been listening to the Wabam Entertainment Podcast. For more from Wabam Entertainment, visit us on the web at wabamentertainment.com. You can let us know what you thought of this episode on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at WabamENT. Thanks for listening. We'll see y'all next time.